I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Claire Mutimer.
And I'm Susie Coulson. Welcome to The Backstory. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast. A docupod.
Except you made that word up. This run of four has a particular theme. We're looking at people whose jobs involve doing good of some sort.
So we have coming up in this season some fascinating and honest accounts, including a nurse who tells us what it's like when your personal life meets your professional one, and the world and work of two homeless hostel workers.
But firstly this week, it's a story of two friends who were business partners, Nick and Oz, and they set out to do good by setting up a social enterprise that ran some really amazing projects. Nick and Oz quickly realised that in the world of community work, their high standards were tricky to maintain or were often undermined, but they stuck to their guns. But then, this summer, Oz died. Today we hear from Nick Little on how hard it is to do good and how it's even harder when you suddenly lose your best friend and business partner.
So I know you had something that happened in your life. Where would you like to begin today?
Well, if I start in the Pyrenees, actually. So in 2008, yes, 10 years ago, I'd been working at the library for a few years and decided I wanted to do a challenge, a physical, mental challenge, right, which I do from time to time. So I'd never hiked before. I thought hiking was nerdy and boring and all the rest, but I thought I'll go on a hike, and looked some up and saw that there was one. It's called the GR10, and you start on the Atlantic coast in France. You're supposed to start with your feet in the sea and you walk all the way across the Pyrenees to the Mediterranean and finish with your feet in the sea there. It took 2 months and it was 580 miles and a lot of climbing. It was brilliant. Anyway, I came back and was doing community librarian job. And on my first day, someone said, "Oh, someone's been in with a project that is perfect for you. You'll have an email from me." So I looked through and I found this email. And it was introducing someone called Oz, Oz Osborne, who wanted to organise an event called A Human Library. And I read a paragraph that he had written about what it was, and I immediately knew this was the best idea I'd ever heard. It was just simple and brilliant.
And so Nick got together with Oz to run The Human Library, an organised event where people borrowed a person rather than a book. The idea is to pick a person who best represents your individual prejudices and meet them head on by sitting and talking for half an hour with someone who was, for example, disabled, transsexual, Muslim. One of the strengths of Nick and Oz's relationship was their clarity of how the human library should be run. But other organisations took the concept and altered it.
You really have to think about what you're doing, because although people might have thought they were doing a good thing by taking this concept and opening it up to more people, actually that was diminishing the values of the human library, which is to challenge prejudice and discrimination and do it head on.
They'd watered it down.
Yes, and people who already had a voice were given another voice, another platform. Right. The point about the human library is those people who are marginalised, who are judged, who have things shouted at them in the street, that might be the victims of hate crime or whatever, are put in the centre of the stage, and it's their voice that's heard. And those of us who might knowingly or unknowingly make prejudgments are presented with that. It's like a mirror held up to society, and you don't always like what you see.
Tell me about Oz. You became business partners, is that right?
Yeah, business partners, best friends, really. He was a great bloke. He was incredibly kind. He was a brilliant listener. But he was a really original thinker. Both of us creative thinkers. We'd try and find new ways of doing things. We get very frustrated with the same old event with a table and leaflets and banner behind, you know. Yeah. We'd want to do something. I think why we got on very well is that we would discuss these things in quite a lot of detail, and we would get frustrated with other people who work in a similar field that kind of thought, well, if you've got good intentions, then that's all that matters. But as we've seen, if your good intentions are ruining something, that the outcome is not positive. The outcome for the human library meant that loads of other people copied the poor example, because that's easy. Sometimes it's very hard to do good, particularly if you're committed to those values that other people are perhaps not so committed to. I can give you another example that's perhaps the best one. I was wearing my 12th Man hoodie. So the 12th Man is a men's mental health campaign that Oz and I created. Uses the analogy of the football crowd and tries to take the positives that men can display in a football crowd, showing emotion, giving their team kind of unconditional support, and often people will challenge bad behaviour if it's against their team or whatever. Right. But also it shows the hypocrisy, and that then sometimes men will behave in exactly the same way when it suits them. Right. So we thought we're convinced that that's a very a unique concept that's needed. The struggles we'd have, people would say, well, why is this only for men? And we'd think, well, because 76% of all suicides are men, because 75% of all prisoners are men, because I think 90% of homeless people are men. It's just, you know, there's obviously a clear issue. Yeah, but people say, well, we've got a bit of a problem here because we need to get this past our equalities board, and we don't have anything that excludes women from, particularly around sport and things like that. And we'd say, but this isn't about sport. It's just uses the name the 12th Man. But then I remember Oz saying in a meeting, I won't say who it was with, but it was with a very, very high profile sports organisation. Right. And they were like, we loved this. We were down to the last three of a campaign they wanted to support. But we think it'd be better if it was called the 12th Person.
Oh, no.
We thought, no, it wouldn't be better. And we didn't know what to do. I remember Oz phoning me and saying, you know, what should we do here? Because this is such a good opportunity, but we're not, they're insisting we can't do this around men. And I remember saying, let's ditch it. Let's leave them. We'll stick to our guns, and it will turn out right for us in the end. Anyway, we had another meeting before we finally walked away from it. And I remember Oz saying, can I just ask a question to this person? Can I do the Race for Life? And they were really bewildered by it. And this is where he had a brilliant mind. And they sort of said, what do you mean? He said, well, the Race for Life is cancer research, isn't it? And it's around breast cancer. And we looked it up and said, look, this is only women can do the Race for Life, but men get breast cancer too. And people thought, oh, yeah, but that's a different thing. No, it isn't. The same principle applies. most of the breast cancer statistics apply to women. So, and you need to raise awareness to get people to go get screened and all of that. So that's why the Race for Life exists and why it targets women. It's not saying that that issue is solely about women. It's just that that campaign is trying to address that demographic.
Yeah.
And I don't know any men who are out there campaigning to change the Race for Life.
Right, yeah.
So that men can take part as well.
So what happened next with you and Oz?
Oz and I had been working on the Human Library for around 6 months. And Ronnie Abigail, who's the founder of the Human Library, his brother Danny, who also worked on it, came to visit us in Norwich. I'd previously met Danny in London a few months before, and he was pleased with the way that we were approaching the Human Library. And they were starting to direct some inquiries to us just to help other people. So Danny came to our event here, and we were really pleased about that. And then afterwards, we were going to go for a pint and sat with him. And I was really, it was like meeting one of my heroes, you know, and...
Yeah.
We were getting into the nitty-gritty of all the methodology behind it, and I just said, look, I'm really sorry, I'm going to have to go, I'm going to the football, and pulled out my Norwich scarf. And Oz, at that point, I never would have thought he was a football fan. Talking about prejudice, he was vegetarian, he was a community do-gooder, all this stuff. Wouldn't have thought he's a football fan. And he just looked at me and said, oh, you're not a Norwich fan, are you? And I knew immediately what that meant. And I said, yes, I am. I said, you're not a binner, are you? And I have to look up binner. It's a prejudicial slur towards Ipswich fans. He said, yeah, I am. And so I just thought, all right, well, I'm going. I went. And I remember phoning my dad and saying, oh, you know that bloke I've been working with on the Human Library? He's like, yeah, yeah. And he said, I said, he's an Ipswich fan. And my dad was like, oh, he's not, is he? And there was honestly a few minutes where I was thinking, I don't like this as much as I did a few minutes ago. I quickly got past it. And actually, it was brilliant. It was fantastic for us to be able to use it in training and to be able to, not just the Ipswich-Norwich thing, but neither of us spoke about football. He assumed I work in a library, he's not going to be interested in football. I assumed that he's this sort of community where he's not going to be interested in football, but we're fanatical about it. But yeah, absolutely fanatical. So, I mean, football was a huge then part of our relationship for the next few years. And yeah.
Can you tell me about you and Oz and how you work together?
Yeah, we worked together. I mean, I spoke to him probably every day for about 10 years. We worked really, really closely together. We worked very well together. We only ever had one argument, and that was it wasn't really an argument. It was after about 12 days of working together in Birmingham, and I said that Formula One wasn't a sport, and he challenged that. I firmly believe I'm right. We just got on. We got on really well as individuals. We understood each other's the way we worked. We had the courage to say no, and we worked hard. But we also were different. He would challenge me, and I'd challenge him on things. I think I encouraged him to be bolder. He encouraged me to be more diplomatic at times, and we just got on absolutely brilliantly. Times were hard for us, you know, particularly when we had to turn down work, and then financially it would be difficult for us. But I know that we wouldn't have had it any other way. Obviously, he sadly died quite recently, and it's devastating, really. I mean, he was such a good bloke, and he did so much for so many people. And I really realised the full extent of that when he was ill. He had a hemorrhage. It was on the 1st of August. We were going to meet with the barbers that we've been working with on the 12th Man campaign. And he sent me a message to say he wasn't feeling very well, to cancel the meeting, which we did. And then I think an hour or so later, he had a hemorrhage at home with his wife. Obviously an ambulance was called, and he got to hospital, but he'd lost a lot of blood. Hemorrhage was in his chest, and Yeah, and then so by the time I got to hospital, he was on a life support machine and all that because he had had multiple organ failure as a result of the blood loss. But he then, yeah, for about a week was fully sedated and fully supported, and they started to try and reintroduce some of his organs, and unfortunately in the end it wasn't successful, but they were able to lift the sedation, so we were able to talk, and there's about another week where we were able to he said everything we wanted to say. I loved the man, I truly loved him, and I know that he thought I was all right as well. And but it was more it was the other people that I organised a lot of visits with a lot of the people that we'd worked with, and to hear some of their stories about how what he meant for them was incredible. But also a lot of things we didn't know about, a bit like when George Michael died, you hear all these stories. So a lot of these were football related. There was a post that was put on an Ipswich Town fans forum that say he was unwell. And just all these people just came out, oh, I know this guy. I was once on here and I mentioned that I wasn't feeling very well, had a bit of depression. He contacted me and he drove all the way to Bury St Edmunds and met with me and chatted and all these things. And I thought, I never knew any of this stuff. And I knew that he did that because he's been very supportive of my mum after my dad died. My dad died 2 years ago, and he knew my dad, and he's close with my mum, and my mum might phone me and say, oh, I've just seen Oz, and I'd think, what? Why? And she said, he came round, he was lovely, and then I'd phone Oz, say, what were you doing round my mum? And she'd say, I was in the area, and I'd sort of press him, and I realised he wasn't in the area, he went to see her, things that he'd sent my mum messages on my mum and dad's wedding anniversary and stuff like that, just lovely little things that he would do. It's just
remarkably thoughtful,
very, very kind. He was just brilliant. He was a unique, the way he thought about things was always different to everybody else, and not to be different, it just was. He could look at things from another point of view, and yeah, I'll miss that a lot. I miss it now, I really, so many things I wish I could call him and tell him about, including we've won an award, we're getting on Wednesday. I really want to tell him, I can't, Yeah. And things like a couple of weeks ago, I was on TV, I was on Anglia News live, and afterwards, obviously, everyone was sending me messages of congratulations and all that. I was depressed for 4 days afterwards. I felt such a mixture of emotions. I felt very exposed that he wasn't with me anymore. I wasn't at all nervous. You can tell I like talking, so that wasn't an issue. It was the fact I thought he should have been there, and we should be doing this together. And it seems just ridiculous that somebody in the middle of their life, who's 46, has died like this. It was in a weird way. You're getting a lot of praise and all these opportunities are coming, and you feel guilty. You feel guilty about it, and you feel you don't deserve it. And of course, I know that I do. One of the Oz's biggest bugbears with me was that I created the 12th Man campaign, not him, because he loved it. But I can't help but feel as great as I felt to be able to have that exposure, and it's been brilliant for the campaign. It leaves you with a it's bittersweet. Yeah. A successful partnership means that everything is always better than it would be if you're doing it individually, whether that's a marriage, a friendship, a business partnership, any kind of relationship like that. Yeah. If it's not the right partnership, then it isn't. No. It can be worse. And it's about finding those people. And I think for Oz and I, we knew as soon as we met each other It's love at first sight and all that. This is, but you know, that you just know. You just know, I think I can work with this person, and we were committed to work together for the rest of our lives. And sadly for Oz, that was much sooner than we thought it would be. Mm. I've even been to Ipswich and sat in the North Stand, you know, with his wife and some others. And, you know, that's a big thing for me.
So now, having had this long time with Oz, and having lost him, do you have to, like, readjust the way you work?
Yeah, completely. I've just left one job to do the work that Oz was going to be doing, mainly on the 12th Man project.
Right.
I talked to him right at the end. We talked about The Outsiders and, you know, I promised him that it would carry on. He said, you have to carry on. And I'm absolutely determined to do so. I'm really determined now, in a way that I wasn't before. I feel I owe him a lot. But I suppose, yeah, the way we work, I hopefully won't change. I'm not going to give up on the values, and I'm going to maintain that courage of conviction that we had. I'll just miss him a lot, because there's only one Oz Osborne.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So Claire, Oz Osborne, what an amazingly cool name. And just remind me, he died in August of this year, didn't he? August 2018.
Yeah, that's right. He was only 46, and Nick and Oz had worked together for 10 years. So I really felt for Nick.
Yeah. But yeah, it certainly got us thinking again about partnership work, hasn't it? It's really, really interesting. And I can certainly see why their partnership worked. I'm still perhaps trying to work out why ours does. But yeah, you know, they had, I suppose, those same shared values and quite high ambitions, didn't they? And obviously both had a really good sense of humour and just buckets of kindness.
Yeah, definitely. Nick says he keeps going to ring or tell Oz something.
Oh, God.
And then he can't, you know, and it's hard. I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Also, I think Nick is aware of how rarely this kind of friendship and work relationship comes along. If he meets someone else in his line of work to partnership up with, then it might be tricky to be equal partners like they were.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, definitely being in a partnership changes the whole way that you might work. And I do really feel for Nick, actually, having to carry on working on the same projects alone, because you definitely, well, for me anyway, definitely get so much more confidence from being, you know, working as a twosome. You know, you share the responsibility, you can laugh at stuff. If everything's getting a bit more stressful, I think perhaps you're a bit bolder and stick with things a bit more. So
definitely, we've always said we would have given up this ages ago if we hadn't done
it together. Not quite sure why we haven't.
There's lots of people out there wishing we had. But yeah, the good news is that Nick is really likable. Well, I really liked him and amusing. So I think that people will be queuing up to work with him when he's ready. But that in itself will be hard, of course.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, shall we move on to, honestly, what you have not stopped talking about all week, your trip to the cinema last week all by yourself?
All by myself.
Blissful.
A small moment of peace. Yeah, otherwise, absolutely. Full on week. I went down to Cinema City in Norwich to see my old work colleague Tim Wardle's documentary film, Three Identical Strangers.
Okay, and I know from the little bit that I've read and from your report that it was absolutely amazing, but I also know that you're very keen not to give anything away. So strictly, without any spoilers, tell us a little bit about the film, what it's all about.
Yeah, but it's such a brilliant film. What's not to love about seeing people age over time? That's always kind of, you know, I find that kind of fascinating, which this film does. And about seeing three identical men, aged 19, meet up for the first time. And they were so alike, it's not true.
So they are triplets.
They are triplets, identical triplets. And then seeing them age, and that's not to mention the twists and turns of the film.
Which
after
you're not
that.
Going to tell us anything about, are
I'm
you?
I'm not. Okay. It really did have an amazing narrative, though. And the interviews were very coolly shot. And it incites a discussion inside your head, which is another part of the good documentary recipe, I would say.
You found that you've just been kind of thinking about it.
I've thought about it ever since.
Talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's kind of nature versus nurture debate.
Okay.
And yeah, go and see if it's on near you, or grab it on Netflix as soon as it's available, because it's just fascinating if you like documentary.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, I do desperately want to see it. I can't get to see it while it's on at the cinema, but hopefully I will get to see it soon. I suspect the next batch of films that I'll be watching will be kind of Christmas films, but we do Christmas films a bit differently in our house. I think this, in the summer, we had a big family get-together, and as part of that, for some reason, we all sat down and watched The Shining.
Yeah, this isn't like most families.
No, I know. It sounds a bit macabre, doesn't it? But my mum really likes stuff like that. My brother is a massive film buff, and my oldest daughter's really getting into films now. So it's kind of nice, you know, this multi-generational cozying up around the telly, watching people, you know,
stab each other in the back.
So, you know, that's how we bond in our house. And I think this Christmas we might be watching the original Omen.
Ooh.
If you've ever seen that, it's a corker.
Well, happy films round at yours. Most people are watching Arthur Christmas. I don't know if you realise this,
Susie. No interest in that, no.
And I'm probably enduring another outing of Madagascar with my 6-year-old and 3-year-old. Well, Susie and her gang are settling down to the Omen. There we go.
Absolutely.
Everyone's Christmas is different.
Yeah, takes all sorts. Okay, moving on. What is our podcast recommendation for this week, Claire?
Well, this week I listened to IPM Carrying My Friend's Baby, which is about exactly that.
Which is about
carrying
surrogacy.
Yeah, okay,
not
just lifting a baby,
not
off
just
the
lifting
ground. No,
that would be odd.
That would be
so yeah, all about surrogacy.
Short story.
Yeah.
So yeah, would you ever do that,
surrogacy?
Well, yeah,
no, I don't think I would. I mean, my pregnancies were, you know, they were okay, but they were not without the odd problem. And I think maybe if I was going to pop one out for someone else, then it would have to be a family member, or, you know, very, very close friend, perhaps. Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing thing to do, I think, isn't it?
It is. But, it's incredible.
It's
like
the biggest gift you could give anybody.
Yes.
And that's what this program is about. But yeah, I was so sick and I felt so awful for 4 months. So it would have had to have been like a sister that I don't have to have done it, I think.
Yeah.
It's a great gift, but it's really, you know, it's tough being pregnant.
Yeah,
it takes
very hard work, definitely. Yeah, there was the Louis Theroux documentary on recently about surrogacy in the States. And obviously their system is different from ours and there are higher payments involved, aren't there? And agencies manage the whole process. And
full of moral nightmares, that, isn't it?
Yeah, not without its problems, definitely. It felt very uncomfortable in places. So do you think if you couldn't have kids, you would be sizing up other people's wombs and seeing if you could...
Definitely.
Yeah,
I'd be like, they have quite an easy pregnancy. Like, they seem to give birth quite well. Okay. Like, because good actually, candidate. Some people do that really easily,
they
don't they?
And
they make it look so easy. My friend Penny, she can just, you know, pop them out.
Whereas
other people, you're just like, oh, God.
There's no chance.
No,
there was never going to be a
because,
chance with me.
You know, like, it's
definitely
just
the
sunroof
option.
And so, this brings on to our final thing today, which is to draw the prize for our Christmas straw.
Dun, dun. Dun.
And the book we're giving away, actually, Little Fires Everywhere, is along these lines of surrogacy and adoption and everything. What's best for the kids? So, I recommend the book and somebody's going to be winning it. So thanks to everyone who entered. All your names are in the hat and we are going to be putting one out. Okay, so it's time for the big draw.
It is indeed. Ready for the name. And it is, dun, 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 drum roll, please. Yeah. It's Sarah Jane Hewitt.
Oh, fantastic.
So, Sarah Jane, congratulations. We will get that to you very quickly and hopefully in time for Christmas, actually, which would be lovely.
Great. Well, we're back next week with a story of how it is to do good, looking after the homeless. And we will ping into your inbox on Christmas Day. So if you need to escape the rallies for half an hour, nip off to a quiet spot or head out on a walk to have a listen to backstory. Or otherwise, a good one for Crimbo Limbo. Happy Christmas. And remember, there is plenty of support if your Christmas doesn't go to plan. We'll be putting details of organisations to support you on the show notes this week as well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are the Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at the Backstory Pod on Twitter. Search for The Backstory with Claire and Susie in your podcast directory.
For sponsorship opportunities, or if you'd like to take part in a show, please contact hello@thebackstorypodcast.co.uk. The Backstory Podcast is produced by Tin Shed Productions.